And now to dig further into reaction over the death of Muammar Gaddafi. And we wanted to speak with a couple people for whom Gaddafi has been the leader in Libya for their entire lives. Mohamed Jibril, former student at Michigan State University on scholarship from Libya. And also with us, Asia Bashir Amri, daughter of an exiled Libyan revolutionary. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
You know, at first, I just want to get from both of you your reaction. It's been 24 hours that you've had to digest the news coming out of Libya. Mohamed, you first. How do you feel?
It's a weird feeling. I mean, after all, I don't like people dying. I hate seeing blood. I'm a human being. I hate seeing blood. But what Gaddafi did against the Libyan people is tremendous. He committed a lot of crime. He was responsible for the death of 1,000 people in Libya. So I'm kind of happy that this will end. But in the same time, I don't like seeing blood. I mean, this happened to many dictators, Mussolini, Hitler, and others. And he got what he deserved, but I don't like seeing blood.
Well, Asia, what do you feel?
I think I'm still getting over feelings of being stunned and realizing that it's actually true. It's something that me, as well as the entire Libyan population, has waited for with bated breath. And I don't think they really thought it was going to happen. And I think it happened quickly. So it being sudden was sort of took everybody by surprise. And I think everybody's waking up this morning realizing it did happen and that Libya's waking up to a lot of potential.
Well, let's talk about the potential, Mohamed. There's a lot of discussion this morning about the differences between Libya, say, and Egypt or Tunisia, where they have infrastructure in place, where they have government institutions, and they don't have that in Libya. And we had one guest this morning saying that this is a country that has no idea how to run a democracy. Do you think that's true, or can young people like yourself actually build something in Libya that would be stable?
After living all my life under the control of Gaddafi, nobody will allow new dictatorship in Libya. Everybody will fight against dictatorship. We will not accept something like Gaddafi to happen again. So we are more than prepared to have a democracy. And when a wise man said, like, whenever you feel that your disputes are like many, just visit the graves of those who died to give you this freedom. A lot of people died, and nobody will give up this freedom.
So, Asia, your entire family identity is bound up with the resistance movement in Libya. Are you as optimistic as Mohammed?
I am. I think, at least personally, I was always raised with this sense of determination and resolve, and knowing that the Libyan people have the spirit and have the willpower to create a democratic state, to create a better future. So I don't think it was a matter of if, but a matter of when.
So, Mohamed, we had a Libyan expatriate on the program earlier this morning who suggested that when Gaddafi came to the United States, that Libyan students who were on Libyan government scholarships were forced to attend his rallies. Was that the case for you?
Well, I've never attended any rally in my life, but I understand that many were forced to do many things. When I was here, when Gaddafi started killing people on the 17th of February, I was asked to go on a rally, you know, in support of Gaddafi. I did not go. And actually, then they sent a paper to the internal security and foreign security with my name and the rest of my colleagues here. So if I returned to Libya and if Gaddafi stayed in power, probably I've been wanted by now. Probably I would have been a refugee here by now. But thankfully, he's out.
Well, that's Mohamed Jibril, former student at Michigan State University. And I understand, Mohamed, at this point, your status and whether or not you're going to be able to go back to Libya is unclear.
Well, I am planning to go back now, but the new government said that they will allow us to finish our program. So I will finish this program, and they said probably we'll resume our program in the American University. And then by then, probably we'll go back and work for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Well, let me speak with you, Asia Bashir Amri, daughter of an exiled Libyan revolutionary. You were born in the United States, right?
I was.
Do you plan to go back to Libya?
I think I find myself in the position as any first-generation Libyan in that we need to find where we're going to fit in the new Libya. We've made roots in America, and I think that's undeniable, being here 30-plus years. So the question is, where do we go? Do we stay here? Do we go back? Where can we fit in the new Libya? What can we offer? And I'm very optimistic. I think that first-generation Libyans, as well as Libyan exiles who spend time abroad, have a lot to offer the new Libya and can go back. Those who studied political science, the doctors, those studying health administration, we've acquired degrees, Western knowledge, and mechanisms that will help enhance the new Libya.
Well, let me ask you, though, Mohammed, there is a lot of concern over whether or not Libyans will get caught up in retribution, in vengeance, in trying to ferret out people who collaborated with Gaddafi and his cohorts and try to bring them to justice of one kind or another. Are you concerned that your country, which has always been relatively tribal, will get torn apart?
Well, I'm not worried about that. I mean, now we reached a point where we have to deal with one another. We have to sit together and speak about it. There were mistakes in the past, and if anybody has a blood on his hands, or should be trialed, there should be justice. We want justice. After all these years, we need justice. So I'm hoping that nothing will happen and everything will be okay, because we have, a lot of killing has happened, a lot of people died. So people now are in a point where they don't want to fight anymore. They just want, prosperity and peace. And we have the financial means and the natural resources to do that. So it shouldn't be a problem, I guess.
Mohammed, you've been alive for 28 years. That means that Gaddafi ruled your country for almost twice as long as you've lived.
Yeah.
Can you imagine it must be difficult at this point to imagine Libya without Gaddafi.
It was very difficult even when I was here in the U.S. to say no. In Libya, when I drive by by Gaddafi's compound, it's called Bab al-Aziziyya, I do not point at the place. You don't point at it. You don't speak about it. You never mention Gaddafi's name when you're saying something bad about him. His pictures are everywhere in Tripoli. If you are driving around Tripoli, you will see pictures of him everywhere. It's scary. You don't know how scary it was. And when I saw him yesterday, when he was like being beaten and then he was dead, it's kind of shocking. This man terrified us. It was, you can't imagine the fear that we went through. He's been there for 40 years. 8 American presidents came and went, and he's there. So we were brought, and he was there. He's scary.
And he's gone.
Yeah, that's what I find it difficult. So that I will not allow anybody else to take his place and stay for another 40 years. I would rather die.
Where would you go in Libya if you could go home tomorrow? What would you want to see?
I'm from Benghazi, and my family is from Benghazi, and I live in Tripoli. But probably if I go back to Libya, I will go back to Tripoli.
That's Mohammed Jibril, a 28-year-old Libyan student, formerly studying at Michigan State University and hopes to finish his degree there. Also echoing his sort of shock this morning, Asia Bashir Amri, born in the United States but daughter of a Libyan revolutionary. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And if you have your own reaction to Gaddafi's death, give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post your comment at thetakeaway.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.